This podcast is for entertainment purposes only and does not replace your own financial, tax, legal, or financial product advice.
Hey everyone, and welcome to My Millennial Money. I'm Glenn James. If you're new to the podcast and it's your first episode, you're in for a wild ride. I'm catching up with Vince Scully today from Life Sherpa. He's a friend of the podcast. He has a wealth of knowledge. He's in the Facebook group and we have a lot of fun with Vince. Vince, are you ready to have a chat about this GameStop frenzy thing that's happened over the last week?
GameStonks? Yeah. I can talk about that all day.
Totally. Now, I guess the way I want to do this, people, is I want to, number one, just detail in a simple to understand way what short selling is, because if we can understand the basic concepts, and I'll like try and mansplain it to myself so you can really understand it. Once we understand the basic concepts, then this will all make sense. So Vince, are you ready to have a listen to me explaining what short selling is?
Are you going to mansplain to me?
I am.
Glensplain.
And then once we do that, we're going to chat about this whole Robin Hood debacle in America. We're going to have a chat, and we've looked at all your questions and comments on the Facebook group. Just to frame our conversation and just to keep it really brief, I'm just going to make sure I cover a lot of the things that that we talk about. We're going to talk about, obviously, these hedge funds. We're going to talk about what it means for the Australian market, what it might mean for the US market, and what it means for us. So, Vince, if I was to explain to you what short selling is in a simple way,
yep,
this is what I would do. Let's pretend that there is a shop down the road and they've got 100 chairs for sale that are identical, okay? Identical chairs. I go to this shop, and we might call the shop a broker later on, and say, hi, can I borrow that chair there? And they say, sure, Glenn. And in the background, we would arrange that, you know, within 30 days or 90 days, I would return an identical chair back to them. So there's a limited amount of chairs for sale in the market. I would return that chair to them. Now, the concept of this, Vince, it doesn't really matter at the moment what the price of the chair is, but we'll get to that. So I go to this shop and there are a couple of other chairs already in the market. And I say, I'd like to borrow that chair. And they say, yes, Glenn, bring it back in a month. And we'll also charge you a little bit of a premium for letting you borrow it. And that chair, the moment I borrow it from you, Vince, is worth $20. The moment I borrow it, I sell it for $20 and get $20 in my bank account. Now, I know that there's better chairs available. And over the next month, all the chairs are going to be worth $10. So at the end of the month, I go and buy another chair from you from a different cash register so you don't know it. Or you might even know that, you know, I just want another chair and I buy that chair for $10 at the end of the month because I know that it was going to go down in value. And then I give that chair back to you, which means I've made $10. Mm-hmm. Is that a fair analogy of what short selling is? If we were to insert
in a nutshell, yeah.
Yeah, if we were to change that to shares, the same thing would happen. Now, I only make my $10 because when I borrowed the chair and sold it for $20, I knew that the price was going to go down. The problem these hedge funds have got is if that chair went to $40 at the end of the 30 days, and then I had to buy a chair to give back to you, I actually had to pay double what I originally paid.
That's right. So you don't actually buy the share. So you borrow a share with an obligation to hand back a share, and you don't know what that's going to cost you at the time. So if you've got a view that it's going to go down in price, then borrowing something today and selling it for $20, and if you think you can buy it back for $10 to repay your loan, all sweet in the world.
And this is where we get to the fact that these hedge funds did this on a huge scale with the problem they've got to give back a share or a chair. It's funny, they kind of rhyme. But there can be an infinite loss because some buggers down the road have said, I want to dick around with Glenn. So everyone go and buy a chair from that shop And because if there's more people wanting those chairs, the prices will naturally increase because it's a supply and demand thing.
That's right. So this has got nothing to do with the intrinsic value of the underlying share. This is about more people want to buy it than want to sell it. Mm. Therefore, the price goes up.
Totally.
So rather than it being a sign of an inefficient market, it's a sign of a perfectly efficient market at work.
So this whole short selling thing, it's actually, it's not really a scandal, is it, that there's been a short squeeze?
This is a perfectly normal part of price discovery. The whole point of having a market is that we want to identify the true value of all these things called shares at any one time, and it will take into account all of the available information. So there's millions of people around the world buying and selling these shares, and that collective wisdom is what leads us to a price, which is the price at which the number of buyers equals the number of sellers.
Mm.
And short selling is a way of getting that information to the market, that someone has the view that they think it's worth less than the market's saying it is, and that should have the effect of pushing the price down in the ordinary course of events.
Yeah. So if we now move and talk about GameStop specifically, mm-hmm. there was a view out there that, you know, you don't go into the store and buy Call of Duty anymore. You might download mm-hmm. it online. So there was a general view out there that GameStop...
Even us baby boomers get that.
Yeah, that's right. there was a general view out there that over the long term, this company is probably not going to be worth that much.
Yeah. So is this the next Blockbuster or the next Kodak?
Yeah.
Or is there some intrinsic value there? And there's sort of been a battle between two schools of thought. There's the GameStop bulls led by Michael Burry, who you'll know from the Great Short, and he's been a buyer. He's been buying for 18 months, and you've got the bears going, well, actually, this really is Blockbuster, and they've been selling short for a long time, and it's been bubbling along for a very long time. And it's sort of come to a head, as it always does.
Yes. So enter Reddit. Reddit, it's a huge online forum. I've got the Reddit app. I'm in different channels, and I love getting to that cesspool and just seeing all the information. And there's a lot of Reddit users that are actually gamers. And in the Wall Street Bets subreddit, it got out. Someone had done some research that these big hedge funds were basically shorting GameStop. Now, I believe
it's all public information. There's nothing nefarious about that.
Yeah, which is totally fine. So somebody has gone, hey, everyone, let's put some big demand on the share price of GameStop and try and screw these hedge funds as a bit of an FU to the Wall Street dogs. So it just got momentum that a whole heap of people went in, mostly through the Robinhood app, because that was kind of the first big app in the States that it would be, free trading and brokerage free trading. And we'll discuss soon why everything's not necessarily free and there's consequences for that. And there was this groundswell of people that were buying GameStop. And it was because the increase in demand was there, it moved the price up. Now, if we go back to our analogy and you know, we had to buy that chair. I shouldn't have used the word chair and share. Ugh, idiot. We had to buy that chair.
I'm not sharing a chair.
Yeah, that's right. I had to buy the chair to give back to the shop. Well, these hedge funds had to get sucked up in and buy the shares while they were increasing in price to try and close out their liability. So it was this kind of negative feedback loop for the hedge funds.
Yeah.
But it was just a really good example of the people power and doing things as a big group that actually moved the needle of the markets.
That's right. But it doesn't take tens of thousands of people on Reddit to do that. I mean, if you go back to 2008 with Volkswagen, there's one guy did this. One of the Porsche family managed to foil the short sellers and ended up with Volkswagen being the biggest company in the world for a day, and having taught them a lesson, he sold them his shares to make it all go away. So it doesn't take hundreds of thousands of people to do it. And in fact, there was a whole bunch of things coming together to cause this to happen. You know, if you go back to October, so you had some good news coming through. So the guy from Chewy, whose name escapes me for the moment, was appointed to the board. They did a deal with Microsoft. Their online sales were up. So some good news was starting to filter through. And that start you. So you started to see the price kick up a little bit. And then you've got the effects of the short squeeze, and which is where there's not enough shares to close out your position. And many of them also had bought call options to cut short your, as you said earlier, you've got an infinite loss. If you buy, if you sell something for $20 and you've got to buy it back, well, you could have to buy it back at
$1 million.
$1 million. So your loss, potential loss is infinite. So often they'll buy call options, which allows them to buy it at $100 just to manage that downside. Mm. And so now all the market makers in the call options had to go and buy more shares to hedge their positions, which triggered a lot of these high-frequency trading algorithms to start buying, because now you had price rising on growing volume. And then you had tens of thousands of millennials with $600 stimulus checks thinking they're playing World of Warcraft and having a coordinated raid, and the thing just takes off. And as you say, it's just you've got all these infinite loops, feedback loops, just feeding on each other, and something has to give.
It's interesting, this whole short selling thing, and you know, to us that are, you know, that have followed share markets for some time, it's actually not a, a big scandal. And just this year, I'm just looking at this tweet. Even the last 12 months, short sellers have lost $7 billion this year, like the last 12 months alone on Tesla. So these short sellers and hedge funds, when they get it right, they get it right and they make a huge spread. But they're, along the way, there are losers.
Yeah, for every winning streak, there'll be losing streaks. And short selling a company with a rabid following is always a dangerous place to be. So brands that people love, especially people who are on the internet a lot, like Tesla, GameStop, Apple, they're not companies you really want to be playing this game with.
Mm. Excuse the pun. I want to now, Vince, just talk about a couple of things, because for me, I think we've kind of talked enough about, you know, this whole short selling, and we borrow a share if you think the price is going down. When the price goes down at the end of the agreed time, we rebuy the share and then give that back to the person that we lent it from, with probably a little bit of a premium for them. So we make a margin. But I want to maybe chat about a couple of things. Along the way in the hype, GME Resources in Australia, so the code in America on the New York Stock Exchange is GME. There's an Australian company called GME Resources Australia, and their code on the ASX is GME. Now, GME started to have a bit of a run in Australia because people didn't know what they were doing in buying Australian GME. I found it interesting, Vince, that what we saw in America probably wouldn't happen here in Australia to an extent, because the ASX saw some significant activity on this stock and basically put a trading halt in and said, we need to please explain. So can you explain in Australia what happens if a share takes off and there's been no real announcement, and what the ASX kind of do?
Yeah, so since the advent of automated trading, most exchanges around the world have implemented procedures when they see unusual volumes or unusual price movements. They're called circuit breakers. And in the ASX, in the case of the ASX, the ASX can call a listed company. It's called often called a speeding ticket, where volume moves up or price moves up or down materially and there hasn't been an announcement, they'll send a please explain. And if that please explain isn't satisfactory, that will often result in a trading halt, which obviously means it can be difficult to get in or out of a position. And in those cases, your stop loss isn't going to save you, because when it reopens, it could be at a much lower price.
And when Vince talks about in and out of a position, if I go into a position, I'm buying a share. If I go out of a position, I'm selling a share.
Or selling short.
Yeah, or selling short. So it's unlikely that it would happen in Australia to the extent it did on the New York Stock Exchange. So Vince, let's move on now to this Robin Hood thing that's also kind of exacerbated this and really made it a little bit complex. And the funny thing about optics, Vince, is optics aren't a problem while the goings are good. When the goings are bad,
that's right,
optics can be a problem. And there's a bit of a conspiracy going on, and I've actually drawn the conspiracy. See my chart, Vince? It's a big chart. Oh,
that's
chart,
a beautiful thing.
Of the actual conspiracy, which I think this leads us to the most important lesson that we can learn from what happened with Robinhood, GameStop, and our own investing. So the crazy thing is, when all this was happening last week, Robinhood said to everybody on their platform, you can no longer buy Robinhood stocks. And a few others. There was like AMC, I think BlackBerry, and some other stocks that were getting shorted.
Nokia.
So they've stopped a whole heap of people from buying this stock, which effectively means the buyers are taken out of the market, which flows on to mean not as much demand, which mean the prices can come off, which means if the stock goes cheaper, the hedge funds make more money. Fair statement?
Yes.
So the crazy thing is, and we'll talk about Robinhood itself, but the conspiracy is all behind this billionaire called Ken Griffin. And I'll put a link in the show notes to the two articles that I've read. One is from the Wall Street Journal and the other one is from the Washington Post. Robinhood don't go to the market directly, Vince, to place the trades. They use a third party. That third party is
which is more common in the US than it is here. So in the US, there are market makers in each share and they specialize in particular sectors or particular shares. Mm. Whereas here we have electronic clearance.
Yeah.
So you put your buy or sell order into the ASX and the clearing system works out what the price is that will make the number of buyers equal sellers. In the US, you've actually got people who make markets and they therefore take risk on that price. And so they are obviously very interested in getting flow. Mm. And in this case, they're paying a premium or a rebate, as it's called, for Robinhood's flow.
And yes,
this particular market maker, Citadel, accounts for, I don't know, 70% of Robinhood's revenue. Like, it's massive.
Yeah, so Citadel Securities, the market maker slash broker or whatever, pay Robinhood for data, for I think, and they... So if Robinhood, I'm just having a look here, Vince, I think I highlighted it. Robinhood routes more than half of its customers to Citadel. So Citadel, I think, pay, from what I can read, Robinhood for all their data. So at least they know what's happening for the buyers buying and selling. So Citadel Securities is owned by a hedge fund. It's a subsidiary of a hedge fund called Citadel LLC. Mm. The guy who owns Citadel LLC, Ken Griffin, well, a majority shareholder. Mm. And this is where the conspiracy is wild, Vince. Melvin Capital, who basically were about to go under or were the big hedge fund that got screwed by GME, Ken Griffin, and I don't know what entity he put it through, gave Melvin Capital about a $2 billion injection at the same time that Robin Hood basically stopped people from buying shares in GME. Mm-hmm. So optics aren't great. You know, Ken Griffin's well and truly, he's got a huge vested interest in Robinhood. Obviously, for whatever reason, he's given a big cash injection into Melvin Capital and Robinhood have stopped people buying GME, which in turn, in theory, you would hope would push the price down. There's two sides of this coin, Vince.
Yeah, I'm not sure I buy the conspiracy theory. It sounds great. And that's the really interesting thing about this whole episode, that it's not the maths or the finance that's interesting. It's the human elements around it and what that makes people do. And, you know, so on one hand, you've got the battle of the hedge funds, the bulls and the bears, And on the other side, you've got, you know, an army of youngish people on the internet and a whole bunch of regulators and politicians sticking their oar in. So the truth is probably far more prosaic than that. And it probably, and this is a general issue with startups, that in order to participate in the markets, you have to lodge capital. So if I say to Robinhood, I want you to buy or sell some GME for me, there is a risk that that trade might fall over somewhere in that place. So if I don't deliver with, I don't deliver the stock, or the guy buying it files for bankruptcy or doesn't turn up with the cash, these trades fail. So the broker is often left compensating one side or the other. And that's fixed by putting collateral with the market or with the market makers or with the regulators. And I suspect that Robinhood just ran out of money to place its collateral.
Due to the rush.
Yeah, because this was, these were massive movements with customers who weren't necessarily well known, wouldn't necessarily have had capital behind them, and many were operating on margin. So I suspect that Robinhood just ran out of cash, and a conspiracy theory sounds a lot more pleasant to their customers than, actually, we've run out of cash, guys. We have to stop trading. Moved away. And I think the founder on US TV this morning did a particularly poor job of putting the Robinhood case. So these rumors will run and run.
Yes.
But I'm not sure I really buy them.
Yeah.
It's a great story, though.
It's great. And I love a conspiracy how this billionaire is, you know, wanting to screw everyone. But yeah, I instantly thought there's got to be an issue with the collateral side of the broker, Robinhood.
That would be my take on this.
And this is why it just speaks to me, like with my own investing, Vince, I don't dick around with these startup free trade things and all that. I use a full service broker. I pay for my trades. I invest for the long term because everything works on paper until it freaking gets a run and it doesn't work.
That's right. So you'll suddenly find that $5 a trade you're saving turns out to be a very expensive fail at when it does go wrong. And it'll go right for a very long time. Nobody complains when they're making money.
Mm.
When liquidity dries up or a big counterparty in the market falls over. We saw this when BT collapsed in 98.
I was barely a child in 98, Vince.
Yeah. But you had all of these Australian miners who were, you know, manufacturing gold. Yeah, so they were all forward selling their production. And so they appeared to the market like, this is a fully hedged gold investment, so I don't really care what happens to the price of gold. All I've really got to care about is how fast these guys can get it out of the ground. When BT had problems, and they were the counterparty for a lot of these transactions, suddenly all these miners were actually unhedged, and now the price of gold did matter.
Mm.
So all these perfectly balanced trades look perfectly fine on paper until something gets disrupted, whether that's liquidity like in 2008, or it's interest rates, or it's what the Fed does to the money supply. All of these things can disrupt business as usual, and that's when you want to be sure that you know what risks you're taking.
And this whole thing is like, I'm just not like, don't try and lure me over to your business with a free trade, because when you look at it as a percentage term, if you're buying a decent growth stock, a small bit of brokerage for 0.2% of a trade to get the certainty that when the going gets tough, that the little startup's not going to freaking fall over and cost you money. Because that's basically what happened. If people wanted to buy more shares or sell shares or whatever, and they couldn't actually use the platform, I mean, who cares about the $5 waived fee or whatever?
Yeah. So Schwab kept trading. TD Ameritrade kept trading.
Yeah.
Because these guys are beasts with collateral to burn.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's, you know, how much is a $5 saving on your trade worth when things go bad? It's not a trade-off I'm prepared to make. And most people don't actually, especially if you haven't been around for yeah, if you don't remember what happened in 1987 or 91 or 99, or even 2008,
yeah,
or 74, things start getting. They're the times when you value a full service operator.
Yeah. And
for me, the difference between paying $19.95 and $5 is not something that's going to make me move away.
Because there was an Australian broker who were new to the scene who had been promoting this free trade in the US, and they suspended their service at the end of last week as well.
Okay.
And I think their tech just couldn't handle the inflow. So it's the going's good while the going's good.
That's not when you want your platform to fall over or to be told you can't trade. That liquidity and transparency are the two things you should be paying money for.
Mm.
And a $5 discount on my trade's not enough to make me want to do that.
So there was a comment in the group, I think from Laura. I think it was Laura. Hello, Laura, if you're the optometrist in Melbourne that I'm thinking. She says, well, what does it mean for the American markets? Well, my view, Vince, and I'll appreciate yours, while this is all going on, I think a lot of the hedge funds probably closed out positions and just thought, look, we might take a hot 10 minutes and just move away and move some money off the table for the waters to calm down, which mm-hmm. can actually impact the volatility of the US stock market. What's your general consensus of the lay of the land?
Yeah, I mean, most of these hedge funds, for want of a better word, I'm not sure I really like the term anymore. It used to mean something because they were actually a hedge. The whole point of a hedge fund
was to hedge against downside.
Was to give you a different result.
Mm.
And so that you would pay up to get a result that's not correlated to your investment in the stock market or the bond market, whatever you're investing in. And it's sort of become a bit of a catch-all term for anyone who's not a long-only bond or equity fund.
Mm.
And their reputation, particularly among people who learned about hedge funds from watching Billions, it's just they've got an odd public impression. But the point I was about to make on that was that they are all working to risk budgets. So when the price of GME would have risen, they would have gone, we have enough capital allocated here, we've got to get out.
Mm.
So that would get out at any price.
Mm.
And that's not someone you want to be on the other side of a trade from. They also would be sensitive to volatility. So some people trade volatility. Mm. Other people would want to avoid it. So this is now a risk-off moment where people will go, actually, maybe I should be sitting on the sideline for a little bit. So this will calm down. This is not anything new or particularly novel. Short squeezes happen all of the time. And it's really the human interest in this one that makes it compelling TV.
We'll have a quick break and we'll come back with some final thoughts and I'll come back with my final conspiracy.
If you're after personal financial advice, don't get it from a podcast. If you would like help based on your own personal situation, head over to sortyourmoneyout.com, click get help, and we'd be happy to introduce you to one of our trusted advisors. We also have a panel of trusted mortgage brokers we can connect you with to get you into your first home, an investment property purchase, or to review your current loan if you don't have a broker. Our panel of advisors, mortgage brokers, and accountants work with clients all over Australia so they can connect with you wherever you are. That's sortyourmoneyout.com and click get help.
All right, Vince, any final thoughts about this whole debacle? Is it over, do you think? Is it a good time now to short GME, given that the price is so bloody high?
I don't think that retail investors should be shorting anything.
Well, I don't know how, Vince, like where do I go to borrow a stock and do it? Like I don't think
it's not easy, but you could just go and buy a put option or a call option,
exactly.
Or sell a put option.
Yeah.
There are plenty of options trades that will allow you to do exactly the same thing. And that's really, you know, do I have a view the share is going to go up or down? If I think it's going to go up, I either buy the share or buy a call option. If I think it's going to go down, I either short sell or I buy a
put option. And just quickly, if I own a put option, it gives me to buy the share.
I get to force you to buy my share at a fixed price.
Yes. Thank you. We actually, let's do an episode maybe in the next couple of weeks about options, put and calls, because it's fascinating.
Yeah. So I don't think this is groundbreaking stuff that will reverberate forever. There were just so many things that came together here to create this furor. But in dollar terms, this is an order of magnitude less than the Volkswagen deal.
Mm.
This is an order of magnitude less than Tesla. But what's really interesting about it is the human dynamics behind, you know, an army of young people with $600 checks from the federal government plowing down to do free trades in Robin Hood and treating it like a World of Warcraft raid. That's exciting.
Oh, it's freaking awesome. Actually, I was looking on Reddit last night, Vince, and all these guys that have made so much money from the GME squeeze are paying for billboards all over American highways because they want people to hold and not sell and hold the line.
When you call me on Saturday to talk about doing this episode, I actually, being the money nerd I am, sat down and did a valuation of GME. And I really struggled to get a number above $30.
Per share?
Per share. And that's really taking some fairly ballsy assumptions about going, well, actually, maybe revenue will return to 2019 levels. The Microsoft deal turns into a Mozza. They get on top of this online retailing stuff. Margins go up.
It ain't a $300 share.
And you go, I can get to 30, maybe 40 if I'm really bullish. But so if you bought in at less than $30, well, maybe it's a hold. Mm. And it's a different beast than it was in October. So back in October, I would have said, this is the next blockbuster. This is the next Kodak.
Yeah.
Because when was the last time you went into a shop and bought a game?
Yeah, EB Games. Because they own EB Games, I'm pretty sure.
They do own EB Games. Whereas, everyone's downloading them on PlayStation Network or Xbox, whatever it is. So I think the moral of this story, though, really is not everyone in the market is playing the same game. And if your game is about long-term growth and wealth accumulation, playing with specy stocks and listening to tips on Reddit is not the way to do that.
Yeah, but that's freaking – it's boring to do that, Vince.
Yeah, but investing should be boring. If it's exciting, you're doing it wrong. If you want excitement, go to the racetrack.
I know. Oh, I just love the idea of like these kids throwing in like $600 and turning into like $5,000 overnight.
Oh. And turning into zero the next day.
Totally.
Who knows?
And, the Lordeth giveth and the Lordeth taketh when it comes to these little stocks and trading.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a little stock. It's an S&P 500 stock,
I think. No, it's a big size.
It's a substantial company. You're possibly one of the worst lessons people could take from this, i.e. those who turn their $600 into $5,000, is that they're now investment legends and they'll start doing even dumber things, which is why 90% of traders lose 90% of their money in 90 days. And that's been true for generations. So what do you reckon, Glenn?
Well, yeah, my closing thoughts are it's an example why you don't really dick around with single stocks with more than 10% of your equity allocation across super and your own investing, own ordinary money. My second thoughts are it's just a case in point why I don't dick around with all these investment apps. And I know the little investment apps of the world, they're a good entry into understanding how risk works, understanding how investment works. But for many years, you and I on this podcast, and I've been saying, once you really want to step up and play the adult type of wholesale, and we weren't not wholesale in the word over 500,000, but I mean,
an adult, Glenn?
Yeah, I don't know, but you seriously putting money into the market, I think it does need to be through a full service broker and not through these apps, because as we've seen, and it's another thing like this 86400 that Neobank that NAB just purchased for $200 million. Most of these startup little apps, the long game is to build it up, get a database and sell it. So you'll end up in a legacy product a lot of the time. in the investment space. I'm not speaking about banking stuff, because what happens is these investment banks, they'll come in and they'll buy these little investment accounts, and we've seen it for years, and they say, yeah, we're now closing this investment to new money, and if you're in there, well, you can just fizzle out or whatever, but they become legacy products pretty fast. So all that to say, I don't dick around and I'm not enticed by a free trade. If I've got $1,000 to invest, if I've got $2,000 to invest, I'll freaking pay $10, $20 and be quite happy with a full service broker.
But in the Facebook group, there's an awful lot of free trade. Use my sign up coupon to get 5 free trades.
Yeah.
Every day.
Totally.
So it works. It works if you're trying to build a business.
Yeah.
I'm not sure it's good for the consumer. Yeah.
And then can I leave on a funny little story from the Washington Post? I'll leave you, Vince. You'll like this one. You won't be surprised, but I think it's fascinating for all the politicos out there. Citadel spent $520,000 on lobbying in 2020 and counted a former Treasury Department employee and a former tax aide on Capitol Hill among its lobbyists. So we know Citadel, who was, you know, a big hedge fund that owns the clearinghouse for Robin Hood. You know, they've spent a lot of money on lobbying. And for those who think the government's better now because Biden's in and the Democrat, you know, they're above reproach and all this stuff, and I'm not making any accusation, I'm just reading this. Citadel also paid Janet Yellen, President Biden's newly installed Treasury Secretary, between $710,000 and $760,000 in speaking fees in 2019 and 2020, according to her financial disclosure forms. So
isn't transparency a wonderful thing?
Oh, I love it. So if you think Biden's now going to drain the swamp and, you know, the new administration's above reproach, well, we know, and I'm not saying that Janet's dodgy or anything, but in the past she has received almost $1 million from the hedge fund for corporate gigs.
But I don't think anyone's suggesting that there's anything untoward happening here.
No, I just think it's a small world in this
short selling, perfectly legal.
Yeah.
It's an important part of price discovery. I mean, if anybody's potentially done anything illegal, it's our friends on Reddit, because that's arguably collusion to manipulate a market. I suspect enforcing that's probably really hard, but I don't buy the conspiracy.
Yeah, how do you track down the user butt plug potato?
Well, that one might be obvious, but most of them will be pretty hard.
Yeah, it's wild. Yes. Anyway, So
Glen Central Coast 65.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Is probably easier to track down. But, you know, it's great theatre. These are the things that make for great.
It's funny, the hedge funds, like, I reckon just for fun, they'll probably go after Reddit for allowing the platform to be used in a collusionary fashion. If that's even a word. But anyway, we're talking crap. We've had a big chat. It's probably as helpful as the money that you paid for this episode. Vince, we'll come back. We'll do an episode on put options and call options just for fun. Thank you, Vince Scully from Life Sherpa.
It's been a blast. Thanks, Glenn.
We acknowledge the Darkin Young people, traditional custodians of the land on which our studio sits, and pay respect to their elders, past and present. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to our podcast.
My Millennial Money supports A21, a charity focused on abolishing slavery and human trafficking all over the world. Check out a21.org.au for more info. If you would like some other giving options, or if you're unsure about which charity you can support, head to thelifeyoucansave.org.au.
This podcast is for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general financial advice only, which does not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Because of that, you should consider if the advice is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on the information. If you do choose to buy a financial product, read the product disclosure statement and obtain appropriate financial advice tailored to your needs. Symo Interactive Proprietary Limited, the publisher of the podcast, is an authorised representative of Money Sherpa Proprietary Limited, which holds financial services license 451289.